Back together again, you and I, wrapping up a busy week Friday, May 17th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We took a look at a controversy over comments made at a recent commencement ceremony by Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso dropped by with his weekly wrap-up and looked at some contracting controversies in Hartford, and Westport Masonic Lodge No. 65 Master Richard Ruggiano talked about a weekend display of President George Washington's inaugural Bible.
So why don't we kick off the weekend here? What better way can we kick off the weekend right here on Connecticut Today? Thanks for hanging out with us on a Friday. Why don't we kick off the weekend with another example of hypocrisy? Why don't we do that? Because, man, this is blatant. And why don't we title this chapter in the fine, funky program here, Tolerance for Me and Not for Thee. Now, what am I talking about here? We addressed this yesterday on the program because apparently this happened last weekend, and now the dust up, the kerfluffle over the graduation and commencement remarks made by a member of the world champion Kansas City Chiefs is not going away. But man, we have hit a new chapter here. We're talking about Harrison Butker, and I went online this morning just to check his percentages and everything. The guy's a top five kicker. By some measures, he's number three in the league. By some measures, he's number four, number five. He's worth his money. The guy is a money kicker. He's easily one of the best kickers in the NFL. Now, the guy happens to be a what you would call, I guess, a very traditional Catholic, a very conservative Catholic. And he was asked last weekend to give the commencement address at Benedictine College, which is in Missouri. It's a small, private, very, very conservative Catholic university. I have a couple of people I know who have gone there, who have kids there right now, and they were messaging me saying, yeah, you know, I like the school. So basically, you have Harrison Butker there playing to an audience of you know, who interests him. You know, it's not crazy that a conservative Catholic guy or a conservative Catholic gal would be asked to in his personal capacity as an outspoken Catholic, a conservative one at that, not a fan of this current Pope, I guess, as many Catholics are not. This is not anything new or revolutionary here, to give the commencement. Now, a lot of people didn't like what he said during the commencement. He's not a fan of Pride Month or the Pride movement. Okay, a lot of Catholics aren't. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. I probably wouldn't have gone there, but I haven't spoken at a commencement in 30, 40 years. I actually did once, I told you, at my old grammar school in New Haven. I kept it to about 10 minutes. Hey, kids, thank your parents, thank your grandparents, and let me know how many envelopes you get later on. I was, you know, listen, you're talking to 14-year-olds. All right, we're not talking. I wasn't going to go there and try and solve, you know, the problems of the world. So Harrison Butker goes there, and he says, well, he doesn't like a lot of things the church is doing. He's not a fan of the Pope. He's not a fan of Joe Biden. He's not a fan of gay pride. He's not a fan of abortion, whatever. And he thinks women, egad, how could he say this? He thinks, in his opinion, that women, including his wife, may be a little more fulfilled becoming a wife and a mother along with their career. All right, now listen, you can agree with that, you can disagree with that, but we're always taught by the progressive left in this country, tolerance, right? We have to tolerate people, and I'm generally that way, live and let live. If you say stuff that's a little a little controversial, it may come back to bite you in the behind. Now, there's a delicious irony to this, and I'll give you that in just a second. You may have seen the story I'm referring to. But a lot of people weren't happy. Now, immediately, a lot of people were saying, well, if you could get rid of Colin Kaepernick, you could get rid of Harrison Butker. No, you can't, because you're showing your ignorance there. What Colin Kaepernick did was violate standard employer-employee law. taking a knee was discouraged by the San Francisco 49ers a bunch of years ago because he was doing that in the workplace. It was during the national anthem on game day, wearing the 49ers uniforms on either regional or national television. And I kept, and still to this day, I'm explaining that to people, and I take it in my own stead here. You know by now that I've done broadcast hockey work for Quinnipiac, still doing it for Sacred Heart. And again, I will say this again. If, you know, I get to the Martiri Arena at Sacred Heart and it's game night and I walk in with a jacket on and slacks and an Al-Qaeda t-shirt, they're going to tell me to take it off or go home. Not that I can't, you know, which I never would, but I can side with maybe Al-Qaeda or some of the hip students do. You know, they wear on some of these campuses, not around here, thankfully, that I've seen, but you know, some of these know-nothings on college campuses all across the country, they wear like Che Guevara t-shirts. There's a progressive guy for you on a college campus. Or Fidel Castro t-shirts. You know, you wouldn't be allowed to do that in your official stead as a representative of the university. So that was the Colin Kaepernick angle. The Harrison Butker angle is, although he is well known for his heroics in guiding the Chiefs to multiple championships, he was not representing the Kansas City Chiefs in his official capacity. Well, he's known for being a Kansas City Chief, yeah, but quite properly the Chiefs have said, and I'm sure they have looked at his contract and maybe said, did he violate the, you know, all these contracts have what are called morals clauses. It may be perfectly legal to get drunk in public, but if you do it multiple times, you reflect poorly on the team. I know people in this business, in radio and TV and print and whatever, that have lost positions because they were reminded numerous times, you may not be on camera or behind a mic or writing something online all the time, but your name is associated with it. So what am I driving at here? We're always told, right? The left, the progressive left, is always saying, well, we need to be more tolerant of different positions that may not align with mainstream America. Okay, fine. And then we have this, and this is the NBC News version I'm reading. You may have seen this. The Attorney General of Minnesota is demanding information about the circumstances of a post shared on the X social media platform, which used to be Twitter, by the official Kansas City account. Not the Kansas City Chiefs account, the city of Kansas City account that stated Chief Kicker Harrison Butker's city of residence. The post, which obviously somebody put up there, since deleted, stated, quote, here's the post, folks, just a reminder that Harrison Butker lives in the city of Lee's Summit. This in the vernacular is called doxing. In other words, you put out information about somebody hoping to have people tail him or her home, have people show up and protest at their houses or wherever they live, their house, their condo, their apartment, and in some cases, you know, encourage violence against these people. So once again, and this was not some crazed lefty, you know, X account that did this. This was on the official Kansas City Municipal X account. Just a reminder that Harrison Butker lives in the city of Lee's Summit. The account later posted a message saying, "We apologize for the previous post. It was shared in error." No, it wasn't. It wasn't shared in error. Nobody mistakenly, and this is the part that drives me nuts. Nobody mistakenly on a major city's, a large, well-known city's municipal Twitter account, X account, Facebook, Instagram, WeChat, whatever, YouTube. This isn't done accidentally. It is done on purpose. It is done on purpose because somebody in Kansas City who obviously didn't agree with what Harrison Butker said or his sentiments, maybe about gay rights, LGBTQ+, abortion, the Pope, Joe Biden, whatever. They wanted people to either, you know, find where Harrison Butker lives, tail him home maybe after practice one day. You know, the team is in off-season practices right now. Summer sessions are starting up. Full camp doesn't open in about a month or so. A month, 6 weeks, whatever. Or maybe, you know, bring harm to him. Missouri's Attorney General Andrew Bailey said the post appeared to be in retaliation for the remarks that Butker made during a commencement speech at Benedictine College earlier this week. Bailey also posted to X directly himself, stating he believed Butker had been doxxed for daring to express his religious beliefs. He said, quote, "Missourians of faith deserve to know why Kansas City officials decided to attack Mr. Butker for his deeply held religious beliefs." He added, quote, "My office will not tolerate religious discrimination from city officials." He said the post appeared to violate the Missouri Human Rights Act, which prohibits actions taken based on someone's religious belief. The mayor needs to immediately turn over his office's communications relating to that post. Because believe me, you can find out who did this. This is not that hard. You can forensically find out whether that X post came. It was posted to the city of Kansas City's account. But the first thing you do is look at what time, who had access to it, who's got administrative rights. A spokesperson for Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. You know why? Because they knew exactly what they were doing. Because this is another, I'm telling you, this is another example of how phony people are on the left. How sometimes, and I hate to play the left versus right, D versus R thing. You know I'm that way if you listen to the show consistently. But God almighty, no pun intended, can this be any more blatant? Now, if we find information to the contrary, I'll share that with you. But and then they say, well, we apologize that we put the guys with the city or town where he lives in. I'm sure they probably have his street address. They probably have access to the Missouri state property listings. Or maybe they say, listen, people can, you know, they're smart enough. They can, what's that real estate? Zillow. Hey, get on Zillow. We'll give you the town. It's Lee's Summit. Oh, my God. You folks on the left who preach about, well, I may not agree with somebody's religious beliefs that may upset me, but they're allowed to have that. You know what? A lot of you people out there on the left are full of crap. And this is another example. Every Friday at about this time, Chris Caruso, our buddy, our pal, former Democratic state rep, Bridgeport. Chris, good afternoon, and how are you?
Good. Happy Friday, Paul. We made it through another week.
Yes, we made it through another week with minimal agita. There's always a little bit, but Chris, this past...
Got to be a little agita.
Yeah,
in a week,
I guess. You know? I guess. Well, you know us Italians, if we're not nervous about something, there's something wrong, so...
That's right. Paul, before we get into the senatorial
race,
I want to speak about something that's really ironic.
Okay.
I think you and your listeners remember the scandals under Governor Rowland.
Oh, yeah.
with the state contracts and, you know, the pay-to-play. And Diamantis being arrested yesterday, he and I were colleagues in the legislature for a period of time.
Okay.
And, you know, him being arrested yesterday underscores why we created all of the state contracting laws and a review board of state contractors. And we also prohibited state contractors from giving candidates money during campaigns.
Sure, I remember that.
So that's part of the public finance, and they can't give. But one gentleman who is the chairman of the Education Committee in this legislative session removed a critical part of the construction projects when it comes to schools. And what it was is that when a company oversees the work of another construction company, they are prohibited from bidding on construction projects.
Okay.
The chairman, under his demand, they removed that line. So now the company that oversees these construction companies can also bid on the projects. And it's just so ironic to me that after all the years of the abuse, the greed, the pay-to-play, everything that went on, that now slowly there's some in the legislature demand, taking away or diminishing some of those safeguards that were put into place.
And Chris, this is the kind of thing, Chris, and you and I have talked about this. I think in government, the worst thing you can have are people being cynical. Ah, they're all the same. They're all in it for themselves. And when you illustrate the DeMonta situation, and you know, when I read about that line being taken out of the bill, Chris, can you blame people for saying it? Because you may look at them and say, well, you're right. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah. No, you really can't, Paul. And the truth of it is, in my years in state government, it has never been this bad. You know, I've been reading articles about how money is slipped into budget with no classification or identity, this being done with the school construction projects. You know, it's just gotten out of hand. And I've never seen it to that degree before. And I don't know if that's just a sense of what's going on in our community, what's going on in the state. I don't know. But it is very troubling and it's alarming because everything that we tried to stop with the anti-corruption legislation, slowly there's some in the legislature, they're just taking it apart. It was very much with the absentee ballot changes.
Yeah.
You know, the House chair of the committee, GAE committee, argued that there was no convictions, you know, that no one's been convicted, as if that's a reason why not to strengthen the law. What it's about, Paul, and I've said this before, a lot of these characters want to run for higher office in the state, and they need Bridgeport at a convention. They don't want to be on the opposite side of Bridgeport's delegates.
Yeah.
So they go along with these changes, or they turn their head, or they pretend it doesn't exist in order to accommodate delegate votes when it comes to the time when they're seeking higher office. And that's what's shameful about it, because the integrity of our elections, the integrity of our school construction projects are at stake. And so I wanted to start off with that because I've been hearing the whole news story since yesterday. And how ironic. You know, here the statute that this guy has violated, allegedly, DeMontis has violated with pay-to-play, that's where they're tampering with, and they're making changes to make it easier for state contractors to double-dip, frankly. Not only are they going to oversee a construction project, but they can bid on the project, too.
Chris, is this just a patent, like, screw it, we want to have the influence, and we want people, as you say, to remember us when we seek higher office, when we go from the House to the state Senate, or maybe from the state Senate to a federal office, or maybe from the state Senate or House to a constitutional office? Are they just saying, hey, screw it, come after me, because I'm going to make it as easy as I can to be a kingmaker here? Is that what it's about?
Oh, I think it's about that, Paul. I could give you specific names of people. I won't do it today, but I could give you specific names of people that are currently in constitutional offices in the state of Connecticut that turn their head or refuse to do things in order to curry favor with the Bridgeport delegates. Now, don't forget, at a state convention, Bridgeport has about 60-plus delegates.
Yeah.
If it's one, if not the most, so no one wants to, you know, offend the Bridgeport delegation. So they won't go out and take any action. And if you notice, a lot of local officials, our elected officials locally, have said nothing about the absentee ballot abuse and so forth. And in one committee, one of our Bridgeport legislators, actually, the committee voted against mandatory punishment, mandatory sentencing for people that violate absentee ballot. This was a Bridgeport legislator. That's what's so offensive and disturbing to me. Is it just turn your head and let it go on because because it's been the way it's been done for many years? Is it because they're afraid offending people who are robbing the absentee, so, you know, they won't take it out on them as candidates? I don't know what it is, but it's just common sense. If someone's violating the law, there's got to be a consequence, and you have to step up and have the personal integrity to speak that. And if you don't do it, then frankly, you're accepting the abuse. You really are.
And Chris, I had to laugh when they said, "Well, we're gonna expand we're gonna get rid of the statute of limitation or expand the time." And I said on the show, "Gee, that's gonna make a difference. We still haven't done anything on 2019, Chris, and it's almost 5 years."
and then they say, "Well, we've got to send it all over to Elections Enforcement Commission." And every year that the Elections Enforcement wants to hire more investigators,
they can't.
Guess what happens, Paul? They can't.
They can't.
And then the legislature said, then this legislature sets a statute of limitation. So any complaint brought before the commission, they have to resolve in 1 year. And if they don't resolve it in 1 year, the complaint is dropped. It's, you know, people don't see these things going on, but it's a self-serving approach to government. And it's terrible. To me, it's just mind-boggling, Paul.
It is, and
disturbing and troubling as hell. It really is.
It really is. No, Chris, I'm glad you started with that because just in the couple of minutes we have left, 22nd District. You know, maybe, Chris, the most challenging legislative district in the state. All of Trumbull, a big chunk of Bridgeport, a portion of Monroe, conservative voters, suburban voters, urban voters, liberal voters, and we're going to have at least five people vying for this nomination, including Bill Finch, who's been there before. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, it's like a big pot on Sunday when your mother would make the sauce, right? You put the pork in, you put the meatballs in, you put the pepperoni, all that. And that's what you got. You got a big pot of sauce coming up.
Yeah.
Where you got four candidates in Bridgeport. You've got one in Trumbull that are running. So it's going to be very interesting. The Bridgeport is probably going to divide the votes, which could give strength to the Trumbull candidate. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what you have to watch. Keep in mind, though, Paul, some people will drop out.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I've already gotten two calls from two of the candidates asking for my advice, so I told them I'd sit and talk to them.
Okay.
So they're out there doing things, but, you know, the more in the race just divides the votes up. Now, it probably puts Bill Finch as a favorite because he probably has the strongest name recognition of all the others.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be interesting to watch because, again, Bridgeport vote's going to be divided. And Trumbull may stay unified around its candidate along with Monroe, which could give the favor to the suburban candidate. We don't know that. I think we got to wait and see. Interestingly, in the 23rd district, which is the other part of the city, Ernie Newton failed by one vote to
one
get 15%,
vote.
Which would allow him without – he wouldn't have to get signatures to go on the ballot. But today's paper, he's going out petitioning to get on the ballot, which you can do. It's an open primary, so you go out and get signatures to make that happen. But I think it's going to be an interesting race in the 22nd district. And what always makes it interesting is the friction between Bridgeport and the suburban communities, you know, over housing and issues like that and quality of life stuff. So it's going to be very interesting how the candidates are going to, you know, walk that line between both constituencies, you know.
Yeah. Chris, great stuff. Great to have you on. Great thoughts here on all this. Chris Caruso. Chris, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Paul.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Chris Caruso there. And he makes a good point. You know, I'm a sucker for history. I mean, I watch history specials all the time, and I love going to museums. And when I see something, I'm like, wow, I'm looking at that thing that actually XXX was in a place or whatever. And there's going to be something along that lines uber cool coming up this weekend tomorrow on Saturday the 18th. Get this, a Bible that played a role in the foundational movement in all of American history will help Masonic Lodge Temple number 65 in Westport celebrate a huge landmark. It's the 200th anniversary of the lodge's founding, the Westport Fraternal Organization, on May 18th. That's tomorrow. Hosting a public display of the Bible used. You ready for this? It'll be in Westport tomorrow. the Bible used to inaugurate George Washington as the nation's first president in 1789. Talk a little about that. Master Richard Ruggiano joins us, Westport Masonic Lodge, Temple 65. Hey, Rich, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul, and thanks for having me.
Well, listen, I got a release on this. Somebody in the station, you emailed a couple of people. They gave it to me, and I said, absolutely, I have to have you on. Talk to me about this. This is amazing. Now, this was the Bible that actually George Washington used in that inauguration?
It is. It is indeed. And you know, these are some of the gems that are held in different lodges around the country that many people don't know about. I heard about it about 10, 12 years ago, and it's taken me about 10 years to organize to get the lodge from the owners, which is a Masonic lodge in New York, St. John's number one, who owns the Bible. It was their Bible that was used at George Washington's inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
And as the story goes, when they remember this was the first inauguration and there wasn't any priors to base anything on.
Yeah.
And when he went to take his oath of office, they realized he did not have a Bible to place his hand on. And one of the members there happened to be a Mason, and his lodge was down the street, and he ran down, got the lodge Bible, brought it to the inauguration, and George Washington took his oath on that Bible.
Hold on,
and
General.
All
hold,
these years,
hold on, General. I'm going to go get my Bible. Don't move. Stay right.
Well, in essence, that's what could you imagine this when they all said, everybody ready? And then they realized, wait a minute, we don't have a Bible. Does anybody have a Bible? And they didn't. And he ran down the street, which was Wall Street, to the end of Wall Street and Water Street in New York City, and got the Bible off of their altar and brought it to the lodge, to the inauguration, which was at Federal Hall on Wall Street.
Sure. Sure. So, Rich, it's been so long. So, what is the condition of the Bible? I'm sure it's preserved incredibly now. How close will people get to see it? What kind of shape is it in?
Well, I can't answer the shape it's in because I have not seen it. I'm looking forward to seeing it along with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually being transported here. I understand it was in the Smithsonian because the lodge had it there to take care of it, to be reconditioned for display again. And I think the Smithsonian is probably the safest place for this relic. When you think about it, you know, we have the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution locked under key and all sorts of security. And here's this Bible that has been just being transported around the country by three Masons to different locations. And in my research and trying to find out how I can get this Bible here to the lodge for our 200th anniversary, I tried to track down the different locations and what the Bible has been used for. And it wasn't only used for the inauguration of George Washington. It was used for the inauguration on for four other presidents.
Really?
And you know, it's taken out rarely, but when it is taken out, it's usually taken out for a momentous occasion. And in this particular case, you know, it was used for the inauguration of Warren Harding in 1921. Dwight D. Eisenhower in 1953, Jimmy Carter in 1977, and George Bush, whose inauguration was in 1989, because of the inclement weather, they kept it within the Capitol. It was never actually used outdoors.
Wow.
But it was in case it stopped raining, they would have brought it out.
Wow.
So it was there. It was also at Washington's funeral. It was at Abe Lincoln's funeral. It was there when they laid the cornerstone for the Capitol. So this is a rare, rare Bible, and we are very happy to share this with our community. It was to celebrate our 200th anniversary, and when we realized, all the brothers of Temple Lodge 65, that this was going to be such a momentous occasion, we decided to open the lodge up to our surrounding communities, to the Masons throughout the state, and to all the citizens around, so that everybody has an opportunity to see such a landmark book.
So this is tomorrow, Saturday the 18th. The viewing is 2 to 5 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, May 18th, Temple Lodge, number 65 headquarters, on the second floor at 210 Boston Post Road East. And folks, get there early if you want to. Be reverent to this. I'm sure there'll be security there. And also, Rich, I think I read in some other places, no flash photography, correct, because of the condition?
As part of the preservation of this book, the members of St. John's number one protect it and stand by it and encourage people to look at it, to take pictures as long as you don't have a flash. Mm-hmm. But I believe the flash has implications on the Bible itself as far as the lighting and fading, and exactly what it does, I do not know. But it's one of those things that they will not allow. Mm-hmm. So we're happy enough to know that they're going to allow us to see it.
Yeah.
You can't touch it, but you can take pictures in front of it, by it. But you can't have flashes.
Yeah, I'll bring my phone and leave my Kodak Instamatic camera at home, Rich, with the old.
I think that's a wise thing to do.
With the old flash cubes.
If you're going to come early, because we're expecting quite a turnout for this.
I can imagine. All right, folks.
And,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Rich. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in all the years that this Bible has been around, this will be the first time that it has been in the state of Connecticut being displayed. I understand it was used in Boston, and they transported it to Boston so that Andrew Johnson could look at it when he was there. But nobody could tell me if it went by land or by sea. We certainly could not find any evidence of any display of the Bible in the state of Connecticut. So we have a one-time deal here where you'll be able to not only see the Bible, but see it for the first time in Connecticut.
All right, Rich, thank you. Congratulations to your lodge, by the way. And, folks, tomorrow, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, May 18th, at the Temple Lodge headquarters, number 65, second floor, 210 Boston Post Road East in Westport. A Bible that played a role in the foundational moment in American history, several of which will be at the Masonic Lodge, celebrating a landmark chapter of its own, the Bible. Bicentennial there. Rich, congratulations. Stay in touch, and you have my number now, so anything goes on with the lodge, you let me know, okay?
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. Take care, and I hope to see you all there.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it. Rich Ruggiano, R-U-G-G-I-A-N-O, the Worshipful Master, Westport and Masonic Lodge, Temple Number 65. And if you want to check this out, I hope I can make it. I think I can tomorrow for 3 hours, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, May 18th, on the second floor at 210 Boston Post Road East. How about that?